You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dahati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Welcome back to another episode of the New Churches Podcast. My name is Noah Oldham, here as always with Vance Pittman. Vance, it is good to see you today, brother.
Noah, great to be here, man. Great to be here. Excited about the conversation today for a lot of reasons. I think the conversation's important. Love our guest today. Love hanging out with this dude. So we're going to have a good time today.
We have joining us today none other than Tony Morita, the founding pastor of Imago Dei Church in Raleigh, North Carolina. He is the new vice president for planter development for Send Network and a board member of the Gospel Coalition. He's the author of a number of books, including The Christ-Centered Expositor, Ordinary, and Orphanology. He is married to Kimberly, and they have five children. Tony, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, man, it is really good to be with Vance and you as well, Noah.
No, really good to be with both of you. I love it. Let's go. He's throwing shade out of the gate.
Hey, Tony's only doing that because I've been fanboying Tony since 2010. He knows
that. I love it. I love it. What we should be doing right now is having a bench press competition. That'd be fun.
Yeah. How much are you throwing up, Noah?
Not as much as you, probably. It's okay. Okay.
My dad, Tony, what are you benching now? Go ahead and say it. Give us a number. What are you benching now?
I don't really max out a lot. I mean, last time I did was somewhere around 310.
Got me.
For five or six or how many?
That was just one or two. Yeah.
You're just
getting loose with that.
No, I just deadlift 500 and back squat four. So that's the numbers I throw out.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that means his bench press is weak because he won't even give us a number.
It's true.
Let's do it.
You're going to hold me to accountability. That's a good segue. Today we're talking about theological accountability. As we talk about planting churches and at Send Network, planting churches everywhere for everyone, one of these subjects that comes out is where does theological accountability lie and why is it important? Tony, would love to just start with you there. What does it mean for us to plant churches that have theological accountability?
Yeah, I think what we're talking about is holding fast to certain historical truths of the faith and then helping others to hold fast to those same truths. Usually in Christian circles, when you talk about accountability, people are talking about moral accountability or like your devotional accountability, right? How's your quiet time? Have you looked at anything you shouldn't have looked at? Those kinds of questions, which are important questions. And, I think a really good discipline for the faith. But when we're talking about theological accountability, it's this idea of making sure we're holding fast to the faith once for all delivered to the saints. As Jude says, and then again, helping others to hold fast to those truths also. When I first got this question from you, my mind went to 2 Timothy 3, right before Paul gives sort of his mini theology of the scriptures, where he's talking about the scriptures are Christ-centered, they're breathed out by God, they're sufficient, for godliness. He says to Timothy, and this is in 3:14, but as for you, and he's contrasting what he's about to say with false teachers who've abandoned sound doctrine. But as for you, continue in what you have learned, which we understand, like we should always be learners. But then he says, continue what you have learned and have firmly believed. And it's this present idea of we need to continue believing that which we have received. And I think all of us probably could point out a friend or a loved one or someone that we know in the church, perhaps, that once believed sound doctrine, historic Christian teaching, but sadly abandoned it for various reasons. And so we need encouragement from others. We need accountability. Hey, man, keep believing the scriptures. Keep trusting in God. Keep believing in his sovereignty. Keep trusting in the resurrection. Continue believing in the God you're praying to. Believe that he is who he says he is. And I think this is important for church planters for a number of reasons, because we'll be tempted at times to put aside certain convictions maybe because cultural pressure is so strong. Right now it is related to gender and marriage, and it would be easy to sort of cave in on our convictions. Or when you pastor, plant a church, Paul talks about wolves coming in to the congregation, that we have to be on lookout for that. But then real practically, sometimes you can be intimidated by people in your church, maybe because they give a lot of money and they don't like your view on, say, divorce, and you may have the pressure there to capitulate to them. And so we need encouragement from each other to be bold, to be faithful. We need friends and brothers outside of us who can encourage us to use discernment and, you know, detect false teaching. But I think at the end of the day, what really drives me on this area is the fact that Jesus will hold me accountable to what I teach. And I just want to just remind people of that. You know, in the letters to the seven churches, he's regularly talking about whether or not they have tolerated false teaching, or he commends them for not tolerating it. And so Jesus expects his church to be faithful to sound doctrine. And so, moral accountability is so important, but also theological accountability, something that we should be talking about.
I love that, Tony. And Noah, one of the reasons I think, or two reasons I think this conversation is so important, over the last 20, 30 years in North American church life, there's been somewhat of a demise, if you will, of denominationalism and a rise of networks. Not that one's good and one's bad. It's just kind of the shift that's taken place. When I started in ministry 30 plus years ago, it was just all it was which denomination were you? Were you Baptist? Were you Methodist? Were you Presbyterian? But now it's more, the question is, what network are you a part of? Which network do you? And the difference is, denominations were really about theological boundaries and accountability, where networks are more about practical or missiological affinity. It's more how we do church than what we believe about the church. Not that there's not some in both, that's an overgeneralization, but because of that, in a lot of your networks, there's not a theological fence, there's not a theological framework. And I think as we think about the church of the future in North America, this conversation is critically important. And then secondly, when I started in ministry, and I don't know if it's like this for you, Tony, but most of the guys that were starting in ministry had kind of come to Christ as teenagers, grown up in the church. Then they went to college or Bible college. Then they went to seminary. And then they went out into ministry. Whereas now I'm out in Vegas, and we're planting churches in Boston and Seattle and Denver. And you see these people coming to Christ that are already 30, 40 years old, and now they're entering into ministry, but they didn't have the privilege of packing up and going for 4 years to seminary. So for both, as we reach pioneer areas and North America is more unchurched, as we reach North America and with the rise of networks, I just think this conversation is super important. So Tony, how does it apply? How do you apply theological accountability to churches inside of networks? How do you do that?
That's a great question, especially when you're thinking about local church autonomy. You know, this makes this question a lot more complex, but I'll leave that to the side for now. I love what you just said. Like, the landscape is changing in North America. I would just point first to confessional alignment, that we seek to accomplish the same mission along the lines of a shared confessional agreement. And I know, you know, right, a lot of people today sort of downplay confessional clarity, and some would even say, you know, this detracts from mission, or this puts a wet blanket on mission. But I actually think it fuels mission. I think when you have a shared confessional statement, it can actually help you stay on task to do mission. Otherwise, I think what can happen, and I've seen this, is you can have a lot of sideways energy debating particular doctrines when, man, we should have agreed upon that in the beginning so we can now stay focused on mission. Otherwise, we're just debating, you know, all these different issues. So I think to have forward energy, we really need good confessional clarity. I also think that, you know, confessional alignment builds trust. So if you don't know where someone stands on you know, sound teaching, you have a tendency to just sort of be timid around each other. And you just kind of wonder what this person is thinking, what they're believing. But I think good mission, you know, necessitates trust. And I think knowing, you know, that a person shares a same confessional statement as you, that breeds a lot of trust. You know what you're getting when they're going to preach. You know what they're getting, what you're going to get when you're having conversation around practical ministry. And then when you think about assessment and equipping in a church planting network, you know, confessional clarity helps to shape that and helps to it helps us to put those things in alignment with the things that we say we believe convictionally. And then I think finally, just practically, it really encourages collaboration. If you kind of know where each other are, man, then you're more likely, I think, to be together, spend time together, encourage each other, share resources together, knowing that you're operating out of the same kind of framework, learning from each other, sharing documents. You know, I got an email just yesterday from somebody in Kenya wanting our philosophy of ministry at our church, you know, but the email starts out with, hey, I've read your theology. I think we line up well. Can we collaborate and can I tweak your statements and that kind of thing? And then it just opens up all sorts of other ways for us to engage and collaborate, preaching at each other's churches, sharing resources, writing papers together, those kinds of things. But if we don't have real clarity on who we are and what we believe, I think it really detracts from that kind of collaboration network. And it can really, again, create a lot of sideways energy in the network, keeping us from staying, you know, laser focused on the mission.
And I know, Tony, one of the things we've talked about within our network is the need to also raise the bar in this with sending churches and our training of sending and multiplying and supporting churches, because networks don't plant churches. Churches plant churches. And the theology and the theological accountability for those sending and supporting churches is very important in this process as well.
In addition to like the doctrinal statements, you know, that I think our sending churches would agree to, I think it's important for us to also kind of be working toward a missional theology that is more practical. So instead of jumping immediately from the foundational statement of, let's say, the BFNM to what's the best practice, I think there is something sort of in between. Tim Keller used to call that middleware of theological vision. And I think that's an area where I think we can help to strengthen churches, hopefully. And it's an area where all church planters probably should be seeking to grow as you think about what is a missional theology, which often kind of starts with creation and ends in new creation, where systematic usually begins with, the doctrine of God and the doctrine of Scripture and so on. But I think sort of that narrative theology is also really important as we're thinking about developing a missional theology.
You know, all three of us have planted and pastored churches for years, but all three of us have also sent out church planters in number in many different places, many different contexts. I would love to hear how you guys have experienced theological accountability being implemented into the new church. Like, how does that happen? How does the sending church, how does the network come alongside, and how does that young church pursue that?
Yeah. I think it, first of all, it is important to clarify your theological positions as a church plant. It's very likely people are going to ask you anyway, when they first meet you. I remember we were out at an event before we started here in Raleigh, and we're just listening to live music. We took our core team out, and someone asked us about our position on marriage, and we were just sitting here having dinner, listening to music, you know. So, It's really important, I think, to kind of know your positions. We have our interns write what I call back pocket papers, which are like three page papers on issues that I think people are going to ask them as soon as they get out into ministry, either in an established church or a church plant. They're going to ask you questions today about marriage, gender, sexuality, you know, issues of and all the areas that splinter off of that particular world. Questions related to the reliability of Scripture, you know, those kinds of things. So I think it's important as a church planter to get these things settled in your mind so that you're not caught flat-footed when you're asked them, when you get out into the church planting field. And then when you, by God's grace, gather some people, have some new members, it's very important, I think, that the members know, like, what are the essentials and what are the things that we can disagree about and remain a faithful member of the church. And this is how I think leaders can hold members accountable and members can hold leaders accountable, is that, and for us, this happens in a new membership course where we kind of cover hey, we're not asking for you to agree on every single detail of related to all the minutia of theological doctrine. But here are the big issues that you have to believe really to be part of this church. And here's what you can expect us to teach on these other issues. And we're asking that you not create disunity in that area. And we're happy to continue having dialogue with you about that. So I just think knowing, hey, these are the issues we're going to hold in a closed hand. Here are the issues that are in an open hand. But we're not taking any of these issues out of a closed hand. That's very important. I think just the way you handle the scriptures week by week, in preaching and teaching, whether you're in a small house, you know, as a gathered group, or you're in front of 100 or so people, in a church gathering, just being clear in your teaching is important. I think preaching is very important in a church plant because it's where doctrine is clarified for people. That's the one place they're going to hear it if they're just kind of visiting. But it's also the place where the vision of the church is dripped, you know, week by week in preaching. And so I would just, you got to work really hard in those moments to make sure people know who you are and kind of what the implications of that is. I think as a new church plant, I would just encourage church plants to stay connected to the sending church for all sorts of reasons, but accountability would be one of them, to be able to go back to them and ask them questions. We have our church planters Zoom in with us monthly, and we can ask them about a number of things. They will ask us a number of questions. It's just so important that you don't operate as a lone ranger church planter. You know, be connected to your sending church, be connected to a sound network, and just try not to operate in isolation.
Yeah. And no, the only thing I would add, I mean, Tony has a great answer to that. The only thing I would add is, as the sending church, I always understood our role to be an apostolic role as it pertained to theological accountability. What I mean by that is, if you go back to the New Testament missiology, the apostles were the ones who were holding the ropes on the theology. That's what the letters were. The letters they wrote in the New Testament were not only correcting missional and practical issues, usually about half of each letter dealt with that, but there was a half of every one of those letters that was dealing with some theological issue that needed to be addressed. Now, we don't have in our current understanding of the church today, we no longer have apostles, but we do have apostolic function. And the sending church is to perform that apostolic function, which is to provide theological accountability to the churches that they are planting. So it's our responsibility as a sending church to make sure we're informed and engaged in conversation as it pertains to the theology of those church plants. It's ultimately not the job of the network to do that. It's the job of the sending church to do that, because churches plant churches. And it's that apostolic function of correcting and encouraging right, sound doctrine that once for all delivered, that faith once for all delivered to the saints, that the local sending church is responsible for. And there were times when we had to engage and correct one of our planters who was theologically on thin ice, if you will, or who was out on the edge a little bit. And there was even one occasion where we had a planter that got so far out of what we considered to be those essentials that we needed to stay in cooperation that we actually ended a relationship with a church plant and stopped being involved in that plant because of a theological issue. But it's that apostolic function that we have to continue, that you see in the New Testament. That's what Paul did. He maintained theological accountability, and the sending church has to live that out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen that done well, and I've seen that done poorly. I've seen some churches come in, say, we want to plant churches, and we're just looking for a warm body somewhere we can put some money on, and we can say, hey, we're planting churches. I've seen others, though, that get to know that planter, spend time with him, whether they've raised him up from within or they're partnering from without. But for those who want to do a good job, they just don't really know where to begin and how to do this well. Tony, what are some resources that you would suggest for pastors, for elders, for members of churches to understand the role that should be played for theological accountability?
First, I would point to the Bible. That would be my first text.
Let's go. I know. There's a flex. I love it.
I'm really not trying to flex. It's just interesting how how connected these churches are in the New Testament. I was just reading Colossians, right? At the very end, when he says, have this letter, the Colossian letter, read to the Laodiceans, and make sure that their letter is read to you. And so it's kind of back to what Vance was talking about previously with kind of this apostolic, and he's making a corrective, right, to the Colossian church about their Christology and stuff. Honestly, I don't know a lot of great books about sending churches. I probably should. Most of what we've gleaned has just been sort of picking here and there articles, books, kind of forming our own sort of theology of a missional church, a sending church. When it comes to theology in general, of course, you've got the systematics, you've got smaller, concise theologies. Those tend to be really helpful, I think, for church planters. I've always liked J.I. Packer's little concise theology book as a helpful guide. I would encourage guys to just look at and consider all the great confessions of the faith that have been passed down to us, and just begin to, you know, get your mind around some of these core doctrines. To me, you know, you can read those in a very academic, dry way, but you can also read them in a very worshipful way, and in a way that really kind of builds your faith. Jude calls it our most holy faith. And I, at least for me, I find those creeds and those great confessions to be very edifying. I think some newer texts that I've found really helpful in the vein of theology is Paul Tripp's new book, Know What You Believe. And he has a chapter on the doctrine and then a chapter that applies it. And I think that's really helpful for seeing kind of how doctrine should shape our lives. And so these are some of the resources that we've used to sort of train up our guys theologically. And then I think it really comes down to maintaining these relationships with church planters as you hear of things that don't sound right. And hopefully as a sending church, you can respond properly to that. What we see from those who are not the sending church all too often is blowing up guys on social media whenever you see that they said something bad in a sermon, when we really need to return to the ministry of the phone call, where we pick up the phone and talk to a brother rather than making a YouTube video about him and slandering him, or even worse, or gossiping about him to others. Like, I would just say that's the spirit of theological accountability. It's brother to brother. It's, hey man, tell me, I saw this. Like, there's got to be an explanation for this. Are you thinking along these lines, or was this taken out of context? Those kinds of questions. We don't do very well of that in our culture today.
Tony, I think that's a great way to say it. What we're not talking about with theological accountability is a relationship of cops and robbers. Mm-hmm. We're talking about a relationship of brother to brother. Mm-hmm. Theological accountability is not about us being the theological police. Mm-hmm. It's about being brother to brother and encouraging one another. And the only thing I would add to what Tony just said, Noah, is when you think about raising up church planters from within your fellowship, and whether that's that came to Christ there or that either transplanted in, I think we have to think about this along two lines. At Hope, when we were doing this, we had one path for guys that had come through a seminary process, but we had another alternative path for guys that didn't have a seminary process. And too many times our residencies, our processes are one size fits all. Right. And I think we have to cater a different process to those that weren't afforded the opportunity to study systematic theology and biblical theologies and hermeneutics and all of those things, to walk a path for them that would be different, that would afford us an opportunity to pour theological investment into their lives. So I think for a sending church, they got to think down two tracks as they think about how they're preparing and raising up planters.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, last question here, guys, as we're getting ready to run out of time. As now thinking from the space of a church planter, you're a church planter, and we've watched over the last 10 to 15 years as new cultural issues arise around us. How would you speak to a church planter to say, use discernment as new issues arise, thinking about theological accountability?
A great question, man. One, I would just say it's important to have a mentor, have a coach. If you're a young church planter, to be able to pick up the phone and say, hey, you think I need to respond to this? Or how should I respond to this? I would say it's important to have patience whenever, you know, you see these new issues in pop culture popping up. I think our temptation at, you know, all too often is to feel like we have to respond to everything. When in reality, there's nothing new under the sun. There's always going to be false doctrine that's floating around in the air. And for me, there are weeks, yes, I feel like I should address something directly. But more often than not, for me, I just find a way to apply the text that I'm preaching to these particular areas when the text, gets at that idea, rather than feeling like every sermon is kind of reactionary to every new doctrine. I think maybe to take a page from the Apostle Paul, what he does in Colossians is really, it's always struck me, right? The Colossians are trying to blend various aspects of folk religion and kind of the mystical religion of the Lycus Valley, to blending it with Christianity, kind of creating a syncretistic, belief system. But it's interesting, in chapter one, Paul doesn't start by talking about the problem and the heresy. He actually starts by giving them a real picture of Christ. And then he talks about the problem. And I think that's instructive, that if people understand who the real Christ is, they understand what the real gospel is, because you're preaching it every week, then they'll be able to detect false doctrine a whole lot easier. I think there's more of a focus in my ministry on just keeping the main things the main things, and the plain things the plain things, and continuing to tell people what the real gospel is, believing that that is also a safeguard against false doctrine. And that's what Paul says in Philippians 3 when he says, to write the same things to you is no trouble for me and is safe for you. Like, it's a way to safeguard them, to continue preaching the gospel again and again and again. I think sometimes, though, you'll be approached by people, hey, pastor, what do you think about this or this or this or this? And it's quite okay to say, I don't know, I haven't studied that. Give me some time. I'll do some reading. I'll do some study. I'll come back. I've done that many times in my ministry. And then finally, talk about the character that is required when we talk about these sorts of things. Like, there needs to be a blending of boldness and gentleness in our ministry. We're like the gentleness of a steamroller. it's like it's quiet, but you're not backing down. John the Baptist lost his head over what he had to believe, what he believed about marriage. So let's not, goof around as if everybody's going to love us. Like, we have to, be bold, but there's a way in which we can deal with controversial issues in a way that's gentle, in a way that's winsome and warm, but also in a spirit of boldness. So, not always easy to do, which is why we need the Spirit of God working in us to produce the fruit of gentleness and boldness in our preaching and teaching.
Noah, those closing words by Tony there reminded me of what Josh Howerton said on a previous podcast about kind of two rails that govern his engagement on social media on these popular cultural issues. And that was, he talked about love your neighbor, but he also talked about the 2 Corinthians verse that we're to destroy arguments and any lofty speculation that comes against the knowledge of God. And so we do have a responsibility with these popular cultural issues to destroy arguments that are anti the knowledge of God, but do that in a way that loves our neighbor. And to walk within that tension, I think, is a healthy place to be.
Amen.
Guys, pure gold. Thank you so much, Tony, for joining us on this episode of the New Churches Podcast. Your voice, your ministry is so important. Man, thanks for being with us.
My joy, brother. Thank you.
You've been listening to the New Churches Podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us, or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.